We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
The podcast today brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC, and they'll match your first deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. You want to bet on the Olympic men's basketball team, Tommy? They're 39.5-point favorites over Iran tomorrow. They should win. I mean, Popovich hopefully hasn't had to scout Iran for 2 years. He scouted France, apparently, for 2 years and then acted like it was no big deal that they lost to him the other day in the Olympics. Lots of baseball, plenty of NFL, plenty of UFC 265, which takes place next week. My bookie will have it all for that UFC 265 event starting next week. Go to MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC, and they'll match your deposit halfway up to $1,000. How's the beach going?
Beach is fabulous. Great weather. You know, we started out in Bethany on Wednesday, and then we moved our camp to Wildwood Crest Saturday.
And, your normal spot.
Yes, the whole family's down here. We rented a bunch of condos all in the same area. And last night we hit the dance floor at Keenan's Irish Pub in North Wildwood for our annual visit to see the Soul Cruisers.
The Soul Cruisers, not King Soul, the Soul Cruisers.
Not King Soul, this is the Soul Cruisers.
Okay.
They're a pretty big band up and down the Jersey Shore. They play every night of the week at some different location.
Right.
And they play my kind of music, Wilson Pickett. Things like that. They didn't ask me to get up and sing Knock on Wood with them, so I didn't have that opportunity.
Well, that's a good thing. You sound like you have a cold now. I know you were feeling like a cold was coming on. You now officially sound like you have a cold.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And it's not fun to have a cold when you're on vacation, but I'm a make-the-most-of-it kind of guy.
Yeah, not always, but when in Rome and you are on vacation, let's go for it, especially when you have a granddaughter that is probably very active and wants to do a lot of things. All right, let's get to sports to start the show, because they're, you know, in the last 24 hours, first of all, first day of training camp for your Washington football team. I think most people know that down in Richmond. Boy, you miss Richmond, don't you?
Yes, I sure do. I'll bet there's thousands of people lining up to get in. I'll bet you they have crowd control issues down there.
You know what? It's not going to be surprising to me if they have a decent crowd in Richmond. I think there is more optimism for this team than there's been in a long, long time. We've talked about that a lot. The news items of the last, 24 hours related to the Washington football team is they got John Allen signed to an extension. This is something I talked about probably 4 or 5 months ago that I thought it would be done by the beginning of camp. He signed a $72 million contract extension, $30 million of it guaranteed, four-year deal, puts his average annual in the top five in the league. It's not crazy, and I really do believe this, that if he had gotten to free agency next year, he may have gotten more on the open market, but he wanted to be here. The process, I was told all along, was pretty slow, and it came around to getting wrapped up before camp started today because he went to Ron Rivera and he said, I want to be here, but I want this wrapped up. And if it's not wrapped up by camp, then, you know, I'm not going to sign an extension, you know, during the season. And so Rivera was involved in helping get that thing wrapped up. I am happy for John Allen. This is, you know, over the course of many, many years now where you've had immature teams and immature rosters led by immature coaching staffs, led by a child owner for all intents and purposes in terms of maturity level. This is a culture-changing guy. But beyond that, Tommy, he's an excellent football player, and he's getting better, and he's entering his prime, and he wants to be here. You know, wanting to be here and being a culture changer and a leader, that's all great, but you don't give him a top five money deal because of that. You give him a top five money deal because he's really good, and he is. I'm happy for him. I think it's the right thing for him. I think it's the right thing for the team.
I agree. You know, I hate to start off agreeing with everything you said.
Yeah, please.
But you did. You hit it all, everything. I mean, he's an important anchor on that defense. He's certainly an important leader on the team. He does bring a level of maturity to the organization. He's not a guy who mouths off all the time. So when he does say something, you know it's important. I don't know. I don't know if this is true or not, because I think when healthy, Matt Ioannidis is their best defensive lineman. But I think Jonathan Allen is probably the leader in that defensive unit.
You're talking about interior defensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to find out. I mean, Matt Ioannidis back, healthy. I mean, that could be another reason to be excited about this team. There are a lot of reasons to be excited. The other news worthy item was reported by Mike Garofalo earlier this hour, and that is that the football team has signed Logan Thomas to a three-year contract extension as well. So they're now in the business of trying to wrap these guys up before they get to free agency, which is smart. They really liked Logan Thomas. He had 1 year left on, you know, a base salary of like $2.5 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. I have no idea what the money is. It hasn't been reported, but I would assume that it's going to be in that, you know, $5 million to maybe $7 million per year range, maybe within the $5 million, $6 million annual average range with some guaranteed money in there. But this is a position where they didn't have a lot of players or depth at this point. He played very well, and I'll tell you what, Ryan Fitzpatrick loves throwing to his tight ends. He loves distributing the ball, but I thought Logan Thomas had a really good year last year, and a lot of what we heard early on in training camp is that the team really liked Logan Thomas, and they thought he was going to have a big year, and he did. He caught 72 passes, 670 yards, six touchdown receptions. He had a big year for a guy that when he was signed, everybody was like, okay, we'll see how it works out. But Logan Thomas gets a three-year contract extension as well. Any thoughts on that, or are you just going to agree with me?
No. I agree with you on that. I mean, you know, Washington football, I don't know who in the front office or on the coaching staff said, let's take a chance on this guy, a former quarterback who tried to make it as a quarterback. And was making a position switch, but somebody had the right instinct on this guy because he turned out to be a great addition for them. 72 catches last year. And a couple of people on social media, I don't recall who, pointed out that we just naturally assume it's an easy thing to, like, switch a position, you know, just become a tight end if you can't play quarterback. But a lot of guys in the league have tried it and failed, you know? So I give Logan Thomas credit for being able to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, Absolutely. I mean, we don't see it work out a lot. I don't think Tim Tebow is going to make it at tight end. I mean, he might. It's still possible. But yeah, I mean, Logan Thomas was a quarterback in college. It'll be interesting to see where his money comes in, because remember, Pete Hayner, their tight ends coach, called him at the end of the year, early in the offseason, one of the best six or seven tight ends in the game. You don't, when you're in a contract negotiation, you don't want your position coach admitting that necessarily. And I don't know if I'd put him in that. Look, there are a lot of great tight ends. This is, you know, sort of an era of great tight ends. I mean, Kittle and Kelsey and obviously Gronk, although Gronk's on the downside of his career. And, you know, the two guys that the Patriots signed in the offseason, Smith, Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are big-time talents. Darren Waller was phenomenal last year for the Raiders. There's some really, really good tight ends in the league and some emerging tight ends, but Logan Thomas is among, at 30 years old, you know, he's just sort of emerging. But, you know, that position, we've seen it. I mean, Jason Witten was playing last year at whatever age he was, you know, different situation. But I'm glad they signed him too. Look, overall, your job as a football coaching staff and front office is when you identify young players that are talented and that you think can be a part of a winning organization and are people you want to be a part of the winning organization, you don't let them get to free agency. You lock them up before they get there so that there isn't the temptation of free agency, and then all of a sudden you end up in a franchise tag or loss situation. This franchise, you know, with some players locked them up. They locked up Ryan Kerrigan, if you recall. They locked up Jordan Reed when it seemed to make sense to lock up Jordan right. Reed, but they were unable to do it with Brandon Scherff and Kirk Cousins, and but they did get John Allen done, and certainly we're going to have, over the next several off seasons, this countdown to training camp and extensions with a lot of really good young players. You know, the young players like Terry McLaurin on offense, and certainly on defense, the entire D-line, Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Deron Payne, and, you know, Ioannidis at some point will be, you know, up for another extension. So when you've got that many players that you're thinking about extending, that's, I think, a good sign. You know, and remember this too with respect to their cap. More likely than not, they're not going to have $18 million of Brandon Scherff on the books next year. That would be my guess, and the cap's going to keep going up. A lot of you have said, well, if you spend that much on Allen, you're going to lose Payne. I don't think that's necessarily true. The cap's going up. There are players like Scherff that are taking up a big portion of the cap right now that won't be a part of that cap allowance next year. We'll see how it goes. The increase in the cap will have a lot to do with it. We know it took a step back after the year of pandemic. Continuing with the now, big... Yeah, go ahead.
The one thing is about the position is all the good teams have at least two really good tight ends. You know, in this league, it seems like these days you need two. So, I mean, Washington does not have two.
Yeah, not every team has two. Not every good team has two really good tight ends.
Not every good team.
No.
But a lot do.
You know, Tampa last year had, you know, now the O.J. Howard was hurt, so they had a veteran in Gronk who wasn't, you know, Gronk anymore, and they had Cameron Brate, but they had great receivers. What you need is you just need a lot of really – you need multiple good pass catchers, whether they're tight ends or receivers. It's helpful if you've got two really good tight ends. It's helpful because now you're forced defensively – to be, you know, to decide between nickel and base. See, Tommy, the way somebody explained this to me several years ago, a coach, he said the real advantage of having two tight ends on the field that can block and catch is that you put the defense in an immediate quandary. If they go nickel and you've got two tight ends on the field that can block, you run the football successfully. If you stay in your base defense, now you've got matchup problems against two tight ends. And that's been, you know, the goal of many teams here over the last several years. If you can get two of them, but they're both really good at both things, they've got to be both good blockers and good pass catchers, you really put the defense into a bind in terms of, you know, how you play that. Because you can still run the football if you've got tight ends on the field that can block against nickel defense. Anyway, Aaron Rodgers is back. As we are sitting here doing this podcast, Aaron Rodgers' video being shot of him walking into Green Bay's building. This is what Andrew Brandt told me last week, Tommy. He said, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of voiding of the final year of his deal to make this thing happen. And that's essentially, if you believe the reporting at this point, that's what they did. They cut out that 2023 season, and they sort of said at the end of next year, we will, you know, we're not going to use the franchise tag, and we will trade you if you're still unhappy.
Okay. Well, does that resolve it?
Yeah, it's resolved. He's back. Have you not been following the Aaron Rodgers story over the last 24 hours?
Well, yeah, I know he was back, but does that mean he doesn't want to be traded anymore?
No, it means that he probably will get traded at the end, that this upcoming season, more likely than not, will be his last in Green Bay, unless all of a sudden, you know, Mark Murphy and Gutekunst, the GM, somehow convince him that they're much better guys and that Aaron wants, you know, will work with them beyond. But then beyond, right, you know, there would be some sort of contract extension. So he plays this year. He gets traded at the end of this year, so the Packers still get something back for him. But they don't have his services in 2023.
Okay. So that means Washington football isn't going to get a chance to trade for him.
Yeah, they might, but what if Ryan Fitzpatrick knocks the cover off the ball or doesn't, and they're not very good, and Aaron Rodgers has no desire to come here at the end of the year, because it sounds like he'll have a say in where he goes as well. By the way, the other story that came out yesterday after the podcast is the Deshaun Watson story. You know, yesterday, the Texans said they are open to trading Deshaun Watson. Today, another 10 women, I guess, came forward, including two that may file criminal charges against him. So we've gone from, you know, 22 civil cases to potentially 22 civil cases or more, and maybe still a couple of criminal complaints against Watson. He's untouchable at this point.
Yes.
You can't trade for him. As much as you might like to, you can't trade for Deshaun Watson, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, I mean, you'll be crucified. I mean, like, again, I mean, how many women are we talking about here? 30 now?
It's like between, I think, 24 and 30. You know, I'm getting mixed up with who came forward yesterday and how many of them are repeats versus how many of them are new. But there are now criminal, you know, complaints, whereas prior to yesterday, it looked like this was mostly going to be resolved in the civil courts, you know, down the road. But, you know, the NFL also has not even interviewed him yet because they can't until some of these issues get resolved. They can investigate, but he hasn't been put on any exempt list yet, but he's more likely going to be put on an exempt list. I would imagine he's going to be put on an exempt list and not be able to play here early. He reported to camp. I think he's going to be suspended for a certain number of games.
I think he will be, too. So, I mean, if you had the opportunity to get him in a deal right now, you wouldn't trade for him, right?
The reporting on this is that the Texans have talked and had preliminary discussions with several teams who have done some of their own investigating. But the reporting right now from the likes of, you know, Schefter and others at ESPN is that there hasn't been a serious offer, one that Houston's been willing to accept. Before all of this started, we were talking three first-rounders and two star players, or at least one star player. You know, if it were Washington, it was like three first-rounders and Montez Sweat. three first-rounders in Chase Young, three first-rounders in, you know, or two seconds in Matt Ioannidis. And I would have done anything to get Watson. Anything. I would have moved anything to get him, pretty much. Feel the same way about Rodgers. But right now, look, Neil pointed this out to me earlier, Neil in Rockville, our legal contributor. He said, no team's going to trade without a trade for Watson without talking to Watson, and no attorney with a license is going to allow Watson to talk to any of these teams.
You're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
So,
yeah, I mean, he's keep his mouth shut.
Unless Houston said, we'll take one first rounder and you roll the dice on something like that. I mean, it could be the all-time deal, but this situation continues to get crazier by the day with him, because once Houston announced that they're willing to trade him and it reported to camp, then we had, you know, in addition to the 22 civil lawsuits, we get a couple of more criminal allegations. Strange.
I mean, this is just stunning. It really is stunning how these things kind of snowball. You know?
Yeah.
And how this can go on with the team being, like, clueless about any of this. I mean, they had to have known. Word must have gotten back. Somebody must have complained at some point to somebody on the team before any of this came out.
Yeah, I wonder, like, everything, you know, now you look back, you know, not that now is the first time. I mean, these allegations now are, you know, multiple months, but when it first came out that he wanted to be traded, everybody kept talking and pointing to that guy, Jack Easterby, in the organization. And it was like, why wouldn't you get rid of, you know, the team chaplain rather than have, if he wants the guy out? And, you know, the relationship with, you know, everybody in the organization, and there's a new GM there as well. But, you know, the bottom line was, I think most people felt, look, dude, you just signed this deal 9 months ago. You know, you can't ask for a trade 9 months after you sign one of the biggest deals in NFL history. You know, why was he asking to get out? You know, why was Houston? I mean, obviously, if Houston knew something, Tommy, as you're suggesting, they should have traded him then. But then if they knew something, did the rest of the league know something? I don't think so, because remember, early on, there were a lot of teams, it was reported, that would be all in on Deshaun Watson,
yes.
But Houston wasn't going to trade him.
Yes, there were.
So if they knew all this about Deshaun Watson, that's sort of a disconnect for me, because if they knew it and felt like nobody else did, they would have traded him.
I don't know if they knew all this, but they must have had an inkling that he had an issue like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't – you don't have this kind of situation without at least one or two women – calling the team and complaining about this guy, or contacting the team and complaining about them. It had to have happened at some point.
People said off of yesterday's, you know, news, and even now, somebody in this league, because of his talent, will trade for him. Philadelphia has been one of those teams mentioned. I am going to predict that he's not going to get traded, that teams are not going to take that risk. Even if they think it's, you know, a six-game suspension or even a year-long suspension, and it would be worth giving up, you know, multiple first-round picks and a player at this point, I think that there's too much going on here that a team, more likely than not, won't be able to find out about. I mean, you know, these recent criminal complaints added to all of the civil complaints, that's a big leap. You can't give up if you're a team right now. I mean, if they took, you know, a first rounder, you know, and you were willing to throw away a first rounder on the hope that this thing gets resolved favorably, that's one thing. But you can't trade a significant portion of your future for a guy that potentially could end up in jail. You can't do that at this point.
Yes. No.
You know,
but are we discounting at all the PR hit that a team would take for something like this?
Well, that's why I said this morning, there's no way Washington, you know, cross Washington off the list.
Right.
At this point,
absolutely.
At this point, even if he's cleared of all of the criminal and the civil stuff gets settled and you never hear about what, you know, some of these women got, Washington will never, ever trade for Deshaun Watson. Or they, the old Washington, we'd say, yeah, even in the face of everything that they've gone through over the last year. But I don't think Washington, I think you can cross them off the Deshaun Watson list. They're not going there.
No. And but, you know, the thing is, my instinct would always be that no team would touch him because of the fallout they would get, particularly from, you know, like, female fans and stuff like that. But I remain convinced now that if he played and they won, most of the female fans wouldn't care either.
I totally agree with that. I just don't think it would be this team. I think it might be another team long as everything's...
It wouldn't be this team.
Yeah, it's not going to be this team. I don't think it's going to be any team right now. Let me make my position clear. I think until the criminal stuff goes away, I don't think it's going to be any team. I think if it's all civil and it's all, you know, there are no criminal charges and it's all allegations and they go to civil trial and it's planned for next year and maybe there's some settlements, I think a team absolutely would trade for that talent. But, you know, if you're going to do that, you really do have to find out now what kind of person this is, clearly. You got to be confident that, you know, this isn't a serial situation, because that's a lot of massage therapists. That's a desire for a lot of happy endings.
I would know about that.
There's another big story this morning I just want to touch on real quickly, because it is the story of the morning, I guess, in sports for those that are following the Olympics. Simone Biles was out of the team competition for a medical issue. First, they were talking about an injury, and now they're calling it a medical-related injury. This was in the team women's USA gymnastics. They ended up getting silver. Russia got gold in this event. The statement from USA Gymnastics was, Simone is withdrawn from the team final competition due to a medical issue. She will be assessed daily to determine medical clearance for future competitions. So there's a chance that she might not participate at all moving forward. She is, I mean, really the unquestioned, I guess, along with Katie Ledecky. And again, I'm not a big Olympics guy right now, but she certainly was, if not the biggest star of these Olympics, you know, one of the top two or three. But,
oh, absolutely.
You know, she arrived at this thing, and on social media Monday, she posted something where she admitted that she felt the weight of the world was on her shoulders and that the Olympics were, quote, no joke, closed quote. So, I mean, this could be another example of an athlete sort of not being able to mentally deal with the pressure or deal with the responsibilities or whatever. That would be too bad. She's quite the Olympic star and personality. And, I mean, this is a huge blow to NBC.
It is.
Huge blow.
Absolutely. I mean, there are people who don't care about sports know who Simone Biles is.
And NBC relies on these big women's gymnastics ratings during the Olympics. This is, you know, women's gymnastics, some of the track and field, and some of the swimming. But it's the women's gymnastics, correct me if I'm wrong, you might know more than I, is the highest rated portion of an Olympic 2-week summer. Typically.
I think so. I think it is. Just like figure skating is in the winter.
Right.
In the Winter Olympics, yeah. I think so.
One more thing about the Olympics, because I didn't do this show with you yesterday. I woke up Sunday morning hoping to watch the U.S. men's basketball team play France, and I turned on NBC, and there was like 3-on-3 basketball going on. Have you watched any of the Olympics?
No, I haven't watched a minute of it.
So, you know, I started trying to find, you know, there are like seven stations that have Olympic coverage, and it's really hard to follow. And I said, I think on the podcast yesterday, I'm critical as to how difficult they make it on most people. But at the same time, I also acknowledge it's a logistical challenge. I mean, it really is to have all of these events and, you know, all of these, you know, games and events that people want to see, and having multiple channels, and then having Peacock, you know, as a distribution ability as well. I'm sure it's not easy, but it's really hard to sort of figure out what's going on, when and where and how you can consume it. Anyway, to make a long story short, the men's basketball game live, you had to pay via Peacock. You had to pay their monthly premium of $4.99 a month to get the men's basketball game live. It's the only, based on what I can tell, it's the only Olympic event or sport that NBC is making you pay for. They're making you pay to watch the men's Olympic basketball team live. Now, the game was on later that day, tape delayed on NBC. So I'm, you know, it's not even the amount. I'm not paying it. I have Xfinity. I get Peacock through Xfinity, but I don't get the Peacock premium through Xfinity. I got to pay for that. I haven't paid for it. I'm surprised, actually, I had not paid for it, because it includes a lot of things on the number one reason the Peacock channel launched, which was The Office, Tommy, and all of the associated programming, including bloopers and, you know, scenes, deleted scenes and all that stuff. But I did not pay for it. I'm not going to pay for it for this men's Olympics team, even though it's always one of my favorite portions of the Olympics to watch the U.S. play basketball, especially when it's not certain that they're going to win gold. And it's not certain. So they lost. No. So they lost to France the other day, and I wanted to mention this. I was listening to Fran Fraschilla, who has been a longtime ESPN college basketball guy, draft guy, with an expertise in international basketball. Fran Fraschilla was a coach for many years, and I was listening to him. I think he was on Mad Dog Show or the Mad Dog XM Sirius station yesterday. And he got after Popovich a little bit, and I did too on the radio show yesterday, for not having his team prepared to play against the French. And, you know, he thinks, you know, some of the sagging defenses, the true zone ability in international basketball. And I didn't think France played a ton of zone, actually, if any at all. But they switched their man throughout the game, and they sagged a little bit. And they looked totally unprepared for it. And after the game, Popovich made some comments that were sort of dismissive of the loss. He said, when you lose a game, you're not surprised. You're disappointed. I don't understand the word surprise. That sort of disses the French team, so to speak, as if we are supposed to beat them by 30 or something. That's a hell of a team. They've got NBA players, other talented players playing in Europe who've been together for a long time. I think it's a little bit of hubris if you think the Americans are supposed to just roll out the ball and win. You have to work for it, and for those 40 minutes, they played better than we did, closed quote. Now, let me mention that before that game, Tommy, he said that he had been scouting the French team for 2 years in anticipation
I know.
Of this.
I know. I mean, this is his job. This is his job to get them ready to play a team as competitive as France was. Everything he said right there should not have been a surprise to him.
They were in these exhibition games, you know, I could tell they were not, you know, prepared, especially for true zone defense. And by the way, they've got, you know, they've got Jay Wright on that staff. So they've got a college coach. And by the way, Jay Wright's a really good zone offensive coach team at Villanova. But anyway, who knows if, you know, the great Popovich listens to anybody on the bench. By the way, he looks completely disheveled over there on the sideline. It looks like he hasn't shaved in 15 days, and he's got his shirt untucked, and he just looks like a mess. But let me just make one thing clear. You are supposed to beat France. You're a big favorite to beat France. You should beat France. We all know they've got NBA-level players. Rudy Gobert is really good. Evan Fournier and Nick Batum are, you know, role players in the NBA. Those are your three NBA players. You have all NBA players, and most of them are stars on your team. And this notion that, you know, like the world's caught up with the U.S. and, you know, you're the ugly American if you assume the ball should just be rolled out and you should win. Bullshit. You know, there's nothing like jingoistic about thinking that the U.S. roster made up of the players that it has should roll through this Olympic field, because it should. And to use it as an excuse, well, these other teams, they're together forever. You know, they play together. They're much more of a team. Well, they certainly play like much more of a team because they were better coached the other day than the U.S. team was. But, you know, you mentioned the NBA players. They haven't been working out with the French team for years in anticipation or months. They've been playing in the NBA. Nick Batum and Rudy Gobert were deep into the playoffs. So I just, this guy to me is insufferable and has been for years. And I'm not suggesting that he's not been a really good coach, but I am suggesting what Fran Fraschilla mentioned. And that is, the other day his team looked totally unprepared for a team that he claims he scouted for 2 years, and a team that talent-wise the U.S. is much better than. Not a little bit better than, much better than. I still think the U.S. can win gold and might win gold. They certainly should win gold.
Yes,
but
they should.
To suggest that, like, you know, it's somehow ugly American to diss the French because they've got NBA players and the rest of the world's really good too, and we're not as good as we think we are. You know, you can be patriotic, Pop. You can be patriotic and, by the way, be realistic without being obnoxious. You guys are the best team by miles. You have the most talent by miles. It's not even close.
Well, he sees what's coming. I mean, nobody after Krzyzewski's success coaching the Olympic team, nobody wants to be the guy to basically fail following that, because nobody will forget it. Nobody forgets. Like, as great as we love the coach, John Thompson, that his team lost.
But college players.
In the Olympics. And people will remember that because the expectation is, based on reality, that the best players in the world are here in the United States and they'll win the gold medal. He already sees a blemish on his pretty impeccable resume as a basketball coach.
Yeah. Well, yes. I don't think he sort of feels the pressure of that, though. It doesn't seem like he's that moved or will be that impacted if they lose, because he'll chalk it up to, you know, world greatness. Like, you can give the opponent, like the French or anybody else they lost to in the run-up to the Olympics, you can give them credit and also say, we have to be much better because we got a lot more talent. We should win these games. Like, you know, you don't have to act like you're an underdog. You know, you're not. You're a heavy favorite. And the French team was good. And they got a little bit lucky at the end. You know, the U.S. could have easily won that game. But it was his reaction that, to me, was typical Pop off-putting. Like, you know, it's okay. It's okay to say we're really good at basketball and we're better than the rest of the world. And the rest of the world's really good, too. And the French team's really good. But we have the best team, and we, you know, he doesn't need to say that, but he doesn't need to knock down his own team and uplift everybody else to make himself look good. That team wasn't prepared. They'll kill Iran. They're a 39.5-point favorite over Iran. But I don't know. There's something about him that just has always rubbed me the wrong way, from those very sarcastic, sometimes antagonistic and condescending end of quarter, end of half interviews with whomever it was out on the floor.
Right.
He's just way too fond of himself. And he's been a great coach, and he's won a shitload. But you can't lose the gold with this team. You just can't.
Yeah.
And they probably won't. probably won't. All right.
Wasn't Larry Brown the coach in 2004?
Yeah, when they lost. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Larry Brown's resume is so all over the place that no one really remembers that.
Right.
Larry Brown's resume is like a bumper car ride, so nobody remembers that. But Popovich loses the gold. People will never forget it.
Where is Larry Brown right now? Wasn't he coaching in Italy?
He's an assistant coach. No. Well, maybe he is, but I think he's an assistant coach.
He is.
On somebody's
Memphis. He's in Memphis.
There.
But he was in Torino. And said it was an absolute joke with the smoke haze in the building and everything else. And then, you know, he was at SMU for a few years too. God damn, how old is he? He's got to be 80. He's 80 years old exactly. What a resume. Okay, we will get to Washington football conversation right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Training camp underway today in Richmond for the Washington football team. Just a reminder, subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't, doesn't cost you anything. It helps us. Rate us and review us where you can. And tomorrow morning on the radio show on the Team 980 at 8 a.m., Ron Rivera will be my guest. So tune in for that. You can listen to it on the Team 980 or the team980.com or the Odyssey app. Tommy, I think this is a training camp that is different than the last several. I mean, last year was obviously weird because it was not really an off season, was, you know, the first year of Ron Rivera, but there was so much going on at the time. You know, it was the sexual harassment, it was the name change, it was the, you know, Alex Smith story, and then eventually the coach got cancer, etc. But I do think that this season, and I know we've talked about it before, but now that we're finally here, I do think that the expectations for this team from the fan base, both the active fan base and maybe the passive fan base, are as high as they've been in a long time. Do you think it's justified?
I would agree with that, and I think it's justified because of the presence of the new coach and the new front office. It's always justified. I mean, when you have a coach who hasn't failed here yet, there's always going to be a level of excitement, especially a coach with an NFL resume that includes some level of success along with a lot of failure still. But I think it's justified. I mean, last year was, you know, I think, you know, the idea that they managed to win seven games and get to the playoffs probably pumps fans up a little bit. But I still think they're almost like in brand new mode with Ron Rivera, some of the fan base. I mean, this is, I mean, like you just said, last year was such an aberration in so many ways. This is the first real training camp under the new coach. So, yeah, it's always justified, almost always justified when you have a new hire, brand new people coming in, even though this has happened time and time and time and time again, and it's failed. It's still, I understand why fans would be excited about the new regime, the new coach, and the new faces on the team.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been repetitive, but that's what happens this time of year. But I do think, and I totally get why expectations are increased compared to previous years. While I get it, why some of you are, you know, excited. I put out a poll this morning. We have to do a Twitter poll every morning on the radio show. You can, you know, vote if you want at Kevin Sheehan DC on Twitter. And essentially, I just said, look, describe your feelings or your expectations about the upcoming season. And I gave four options. You know, you're excited because you think it's a very good team. You're cautiously optimistic. You think it's a year or two away, or you don't care. Cautiously optimistic's got 60% of the vote. That doesn't surprise me necessarily, because I think that even the most optimistic fan who's super excited about, you know, the talent on defense, which there is talent on defense, some of the young talent on offense, which there is, the expertise and the competence level of a coaching staff in year two, it's so much more than it used to be. A quarterback upgrade, no matter what you think of Ryan Fitzpatrick, yes. So at the very least, you're like cautiously optimistic that they are on the rise. Now, what that means in terms of wins and position in the standings and playoffs, et cetera, you know, there's probably a big disparity among many of you. But I am certainly cautiously optimistic that the football operation is on the right track here. Now, you know, we've done this before where we get to you know, this stage of just comparing it to what it used to be. Like, I remember when Vinny Serrato was finally hired and they hired Mike Shanahan and Bruce Allen, you know, I was, and many people were like so excited, but it's just because, you know, anything would have looked better than what they had had before with Jim Zorn and Vinny Serrato. And so, but it's more than that this time. You know, it's more than just Mike Shanahan. It's more than just, well, they may have found their quarterback with RG3, or well, they may have found their quarterback with Kirk Cousins. This is a more well-rounded roster than it's ever been. It still has a big question mark on the most important position on the field, which is why you can't go all in and say this is a legitimate, you know, division champion, maybe wins a playoff game or two kind of team. You can't do that when you're not, you know, 100% sure that you've got, you know, the quarterback. You know, it may be much improved from where it was last year, but if it's Ryan Fitzpatrick the way he's been throughout his career, you're going to have some heartbreaking moments during the season.
Yes.
But it's a more well-rounded football roster than it's really almost ever been or been in a long, long time. It's a better coaching staff. And for the moment, organizationally, there seems to be a bit of stability as it relates to the football operation compared to years past. That doesn't mean it will continue.
It's certainly not a better coaching staff than when Mike Shanahan was here.
No, I would agree with you on that, but okay. I'm comparing it to the 6 years prior,
right,
which was the Jay Gruden and all of those, you know, one bad defensive coordinator after another.
I agree. And you know what? I agree with you on the roster. And I know this is kind of ridiculous to say this about Mike Shanahan, and I'm probably totally wrong about it, but I think he underestimated how bad the personnel was when he first came here in 2010. I mean, it was a really bad, bad roster he was inheriting.
No doubt.
And Ron Rivera inherited a good defensive roster with at least one pretty good offensive player in Terry McLaurin. I think it has progressed since then to a far more well-rounded roster. Here's something I was thinking about, and this hit me with the Olympics. And this is why I could probably never be a fan anymore. I can't separate the reality from the fantasy anymore. I'm not capable of it. You know, compartmentalizing what you know as opposed to what you want to believe.
Give me an example.
I can't do that anymore. Well, I mean, I can't enjoy the Olympics because I know what a con game and a fraud it is. I know the corruption that goes on behind the scenes. I know the damage it causes as an event to the places that host it. And I can't separate that from the athletes' performances anymore. I can't do that.
Okay.
You know, and so with Washington football, when we talk about this all the time, the idea is you have to separate what you know about the owner and his track record, the Surgeon General's warning, from the hope to be optimistic that this could be different. Well, I'm not capable of that anymore. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's just that this moment in time is perhaps a unique moment in time where he is at his most vulnerable and maybe just sort of recovering on the ropes for a little while after the last year. Now, the unfortunate part of that is there wasn't, you know, a real reprimand of anything that happened here previously. And he almost felt like he won, like there was some sense that he won this whole Beth Wilkinson investigation. But whatever. I understand, and I have tried to explain to everybody that listens and friends of mine that while, you know, I have to compartmentalize here because, like we've said before, like, what's the point? Like, if you're going to...
Yes. Exactly.
If you're going to just say, well, it's never going to work as long as he owns the team, which may be true, then what's the point of even paying attention and having, you know, paying attention to the team or even having a job like the one I have where you've got to talk like it's much more fun to talk about the games and the team and the players than it is the other stuff. And to treat it as sort of a one-off every season, maybe this will be the season that they actually, you know, go 9-7, or in this particular case, 10-7, and win a playoff game for the first time in 2005. Overall, though, like the football operation itself, if you can for a moment separate the fact that Snyder still owns the team, is in one of the healthiest positions it's been in a long time. It's got the most well-rounded roster that it has had. It's got real depth. It's got a good salary cap position. It has a very, very intriguing defensive core that looks like it could produce not only one, but maybe two or three great NFL defensive stars, you know, including maybe the best defensive player in the game at some point. Offensively, you've added some pieces. You still have the question at quarterback. And, you know, I would almost say, look, I think they could go 9-8 this year and be in the playoff hunt. You know, I think 10 is sort of an outlier until I know exactly what they have at quarterback. But I think that they can get to Thanksgiving and still be in the mix, you know, at 5-5 or 6-4 or, you know, 4-6 in a bad division. Who knows? With still a lot of their division games left. Remember, the schedule this year lays out in such an odd way. They play 5 of their 6 division games over the final 5 games of the season. They have Dallas, Philly, New York to end the season. You get more than 3 months that pass
between their first division game and their second division game this year.
Wow.
That's crazy. But I think until we know what they have at quarterback, not just for this year, but in the future, you have to dial back expectations that reach like late January and certainly early February. It's just not realistic to expect them to be a Super Bowl contender or an NFC Championship contender unless you know you have one of those guys at quarterback, and we don't know that right now. But they could have, over the next few years, a big-time defense with two or three players that are Pro Bowlers on defense, and maybe the defensive MVP at some point over the next 2 to 3 years. And that's really encouraging overall. I wanted to mention one player in particular, because I talked about this guy. I think, you know, when training camp begins, there's always like a guy. I try to focus in on one or two guys that I think I have a sense that the coaching staff really believes will break out to a certain degree this year. And maybe the fan base isn't thinking about that player. And my player is Kalik Hudson, number 47, Cooley's old number. He played a lot of snaps at the end of last year for a guy who was primarily a special teams player. He played 50% of the snaps in the game against Seattle late in the year. He is high motor, high energy, can really run, and can really hit. They loved him on special teams. They singled him out much a few times last year. It's a position that doesn't have necessarily a lot of the depth that other positions have. And I think that 47 Kalik Hudson is going to be a significant contributor on this team this year. And overall, I find the linebacker position in particular one of the more intriguing, because, and I will ask Ron Rivera this, they've got to become a better run-stopping defensive team than they were last year. For those of you that think that this was a great defense and statistically it measured out as like, you know, top four or five, that's bullshit. It wasn't a great defense. They feasted on some bad offensive teams and some backup quarterbacks, which raised their quantitative statistical profile and ranking. This is a defense that was way too streaky and inconsistent against the run. And unless they're great against the run, they're not a great defense. Remember Ron Rivera's line when he got hired: we're going to stop the run on the way to the quarterback. Well, they got to the quarterback, and they generated a lot of pressure. But in key moments, they did not stop the run. They've got to become a better run-stopping team in 2021. And the key to that is, did they improve at linebacker with the addition of Jamin Davis? And maybe we saw at the end of last year the emergence of a guy like Kalik Hudson. That's going to be crucial. The secondary as well, you know, they play a lot of nickel. Their nickel defense is almost their base defense. They've got that Buffalo nickel position with Cam Curl. Collins will play it. Kalik Hudson might play it, you know, at times. But I think one of the real keys to this year, beyond the obvious, which is quarterback, is this defense capable of being a great run-stopping team? If they are, then they may raise their level to elite, to really, like, legitimately top three or four. And that's going to keep them, Tommy, in every game. It's going to give them a chance, even against the schedule they're playing, to be a really competitive football team.
You see, ladies and gentlemen, that's compartmentalizing right
yes,
there.
Yes, it was.
Absolutely.
What would you suggest?
That's a classic case of it.
It is.
No,
and I'm.
No, I agree. Like I said, I think you have to if you're a fan. You have to do it.
You have to if you're a sports talk show host in Washington, D.C. Because what are you going to do?
I don't know if you do.
What are you going to do? Come on the air every day and say, oh, that's great. You know, Chase Young's awesome. Montez Sweat's great. But Dan Snyder still owns the team. Let's talk, you know, let's talk hockey in August and September. No, that's not going to work. And, you know, like we've always said, people still, even if they don't believe that this team will ever amount to anything as long as Dan Snyder owns a team, people still love football, and people still love watching football. Like, there's no close second.
Yes.
And so do I.
Yeah, you're right. It's the same, It's the safety net that has protected the owner and still made him a rich man in spite of himself when it comes to the football team. I think there's also going to be, and this is just a general observation, more excitement this year because people are desperate to be excited after going through COVID. You know, I mean, they want to feel excited. They want to feel optimistic. I think I'd be shocked if they don't have a good home crowd for their first home game.
I agree.
What about you?
I think that, you know, I don't think it'll be a sellout, but I think that they will have one of the more pro home team crowds that they've had in a long time. Obviously, last year, no crowds. 2019 and 2018, even when they got off to the good start, it's still, I mean, you know, the game that Alex Smith got injured in when they were 6-3 against Houston wasn't anywhere near a sellout. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. And, you know, they have the benefit here of starting with two home games in September, you know, against the Chargers, who won't bring a big opponent's fan base into the stadium. And then they have the Giants on Thursday night. So you do have... you do have that. Anyway, you want to get to the Nats and that devastating loss last night and the day before and what they're going to do next. I want you to tell us what they're going to do next. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Couple more things and we'll be done for the day. First of all, before we get to the Nats and another topic that we're going to address here, I just wanted to mention that Nikki Javala just posted. Nikki covers the team, the Washington football team, for the Post. She just reported that as of July 26th, which is yesterday, Washington still had the lowest player vax rate in the NFL, with 60% having received at least one dose per source. Indy is the second lowest at 63%. Overall, nearly 84% of the NFL players are at least partially vaccinated. So Washington, lowest vaccination rate right now, or as of yesterday in the NFL, with 60% having received at least one dose.
Well, that's, you know, for anyone with a brain, that's got to be very disappointing. If you don't recognize the scope of what that does to the team, what that potentially can do to your team, then you'll buy anything this team does. Then you'll buy anything they do, no matter what they do. They can't do anything wrong. If you don't understand that and how this hurts the team.
Yeah, let's see where it is when, you know, they get to playing games where they're at risk. But I want to make one thing clear in Nikki's tweet. 60% having received at least one dose. That means 40% haven't had at least one dose. So 40% as of now have been anti-vaccination. And that's a big percentage of of a football team in the NFL. And by the way, that's a big percentage of our area. You know, there are areas of this country where vaccination rates are much higher and there are vaccination rates in states that are much lower. This is one of the areas of the country where, you know, the vaccination rates are high. And by the way, that is associated typically with a very high education rate in our area. But anyway, I digress. I just wanted to give that information. I watched the Nats game. By the way, I went to the Nats-Orioles game Saturday night. Did I tell you that? I forget if I told you that or not.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I was up in Baltimore with one of my sons, and it was sort of a last-minute decision. And I'll tell you why it was a last-minute decision. It's because I do love Camden Yards. I haven't been to Camden Yards in like three or four. I think the last time I was at Camden Yards is when we did an opening day for the station because we carried the Orioles. So that may have been 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. But I love Camden.
Much longer than that.
Well, no, Cooley and I did one.
Oh, okay.
And I had to be up there for an opening day, even though I wasn't doing a show one of those years because we all had to be up there. But anyway, I love Camden Yards. It was a beautiful day Saturday and Saturday evening. It was not hot and it wasn't humid. But really, Tommy, you know what I thought? I thought that there would be a small crowd. And I thought it would be easy to get tickets, easy to park. We could stay for five, six innings, leave if we wanted to. Do you know it was the largest crowd at Camden Yards in 2 years Saturday night?
Well, and it must have been a giveaway.
Well, it was Jim Palmer bobblehead night.
There you go. That's why it was the largest crowd.
Well, it's also because they were playing the Nats, and so you had a lot of people coming.
No. Trust me, the Jim Palmer bobblehead was the game changer for that crowd.
Okay. I got one, and I'm putting it up here in the studio and I'm for you. Actually, you know, in the process of this move, I've got a couple of things that I've found that one of these, the next time we get together in person, you're going to love some of the things that I found as we started to move. And I have had boxes up in the attic of various sports-related things and various newspapers, old newspapers. I was a collector of old newspapers, and I have a huge box.
I used to be, too.
I have a huge box of old newspapers, and I thought about throwing them out, and then I decided not to. Also, I had a lot of unopened football cards, which I was immediately... I was like, do I open these or do I leave them unopened? And I got really good advice about leaving them unopened. So anyway, I went to the game and it was really crowded. It wasn't a sellout, but it was really crowded, and ran into a couple of people who really enjoy the podcast. So for one of the guys, Ryan came up, talked to me for a while. Joe came up, talked to me for a while. Joe really loved the podcast and was talking about several recent episodes of the podcast. But I went and saw the Nats. They lost that game. They lost on a walk-off Sunday night. And then last night, my God, poor Brad Hand can't get anybody out. He, with a 5-3 lead, gives up a 3-run homer after a wild pitch, a walk, and a 3-run shot to Andrew McCutchen. They've lost nine. They've lost five in a row. They're nine below below 500 and 8.5 out. And I would assume, tell me, they're going to be big-time sellers here over the next 72 hours.
I think that's a reasonable assumption at this point. The one that will hurt will be Max Scherzer.
Yep.
I mean, that's the one that's going to, even though he's a rental, because, you know, I mean, he's only under contract for the rest of the season. That's still probably the one that would bring the most return. I don't think they're going to be trading Trey Turner, who will be a free agent not next year, but the year after.
They should not trade Trey Turner. Turner and Soto obviously are the untouchables.
But yeah, I know that. But let's remember, this team has not signed its young players.
Right.
Except for Strasburg. They've let them go. You know, so no, I don't think they're going to trade Turner because I don't think... Remember the Learners, at the last minute, Rizzo was all set to trade Bryce Harper in July of the trading deadline in his last year. And the Lerner said no.
I know.
The Lerner's backed out at the last minute. So they're not going to trade Turner at this point. But, you know, Scherzer, I mean, you know, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year anyway. If you haven't signed him to a contract extension at this point, you want to try to get something for him. If you wanted to bring him back, although that never seems to happen, you could bring him back, you know, when free agency starts. But it's a shame because he's become one of the most important athletes in Washington sports. And it will be a shame to say goodbye to him if that's the case.
It really will. I'm just reading Jeff Passan right now, who suggests or reports that the Nats have shown a willingness to move Trey Turner. I hope that doesn't happen. It would, I mean, in terms of the teams that Scherzer would go to, it looks like Tampa and any playoff contender, obviously, is going to be very interested.
Now, let me just point out something. When in reporting for this,
Heyman,
people, general managers talk every day about players on their roster and possible trades. And that doesn't necessarily always mean anything. In other words, like Mike Rizzo could have gotten calls from six general managers saying, you know, we're interested in Trey Turner, and Rizzo's going to say, well, what are you offering?
Right.
I mean, that's natural. That happens all the time.
Sure.
That doesn't mean they're going to trade Trey Turner.
Look, we're going to know here in the next 48 to 72 hours, but your guess is Max Scherzer's gone and what, maybe Hudson too?
Yeah, maybe Josh Bell, Josh Harrison.
Who would want Brad Hand at this point?
Yeah, I know. But, you know, Daniel Hudson, probably, maybe. So, I mean, but the only one that will hurt Nats fans is Scherzer. I mean, you know, I mean, behind Alex Ovechkin, I think he's become the most important athlete in this city.
Let's finish with what you wanted to talk about that you mentioned during the break.
Okay. There are some reports that Simone Biles, who declined to compete in the team gymnastics competition finals for some kind of injury that has been deemed not physical, so everyone assuming it's some kind of mental issue with her. She may not compete in the rest of the Olympics. There's been speculation that may happen. And people who cover the Olympics, cover gymnastics, say that she has had a tremendous burden on her carrying the fate of the United States Olympics for probably 5-6 years now. And it's been tremendous pressure for her. And people who are smarter about this than me have talked about that and have expressed sympathy for her situation. And that's fine. But she's 24 years old. She's not a 17-year-old competing. And I'm just wondering, will we now, if we're changing the way we think about this, if a 24-year-old quarterback sitting on an NFL bench in the fourth quarter says, I can't go out there, I'm frozen, I can't do it, I have too much pressure on me, I can't go out there and do it, what would be the sympathy and what would be the pushback on that?
There wouldn't be any. I think there are degrees of sort of mental stress. You know, there is what Simone Biles is saying, and, you know, we're picking up on more of this as it comes out, and it's coming out as we're doing this podcast from the very beginning. You know, she says she was afraid she'd be injured if she continued to compete in a rattled state of mind. She's been fighting the pressure demons. There's a quote here. Hold on for 1 second. Let me pull it up. That she needs to put her mental health first. I didn't want to go into any of the other events, second guessing myself. I just wasn't in the right headspace for this. I think that there, I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm not, you know, a mental health therapist, but someone who has, you know, been diagnosed with mental health issues related to, say, you know, anxiety issues, depression, which is obviously very serious. Things like, you know, OCD and panic disorders and all of these other things. I can't even begin to list them. But, you know, somebody who's really been diagnosed is suffering from a mental health illness. I think there should be plenty of compassion for and plenty of leeway given. I don't know that she has said that. And, you know, Osaka didn't necessarily say that either. Osaka just said that she felt the pressure of these press conferences and the negativity towards her as something that was impacting her game. To answer your question, of course, the 24-year-old quarterback, you know, the quarterback that's 2 years, 3 years removed from playing college football is not going to be given that much sympathy if there isn't a true, like, mental health illness diagnosis that comes along with the announcement. You know, Kevin Love suffers from anxiety, depression, and panic attack disorder. You know, and I think there was some compassion for him. DeMar DeRozan also was diagnosed with some of that. And they were, you know, they're veteran players in the league. And I think that there was, you know, an appropriate amount of compassion for those players. But if a player came out and just said too much pressure, the football player would be treated much differently than Simone Biles.
Yeah, and let's take a 21-year-old college quarterback.
Much different than Simone Biles.
Thing.
Much different.
Yeah.
So,
and that doesn't seem fair.
It might not be fair, but, you know, let's be candid here. A young female athlete in an individual sport that is a team sport in the Olympics, whatever, but it's primarily sort of an individual thing, is perceived to be, whether true or not, and it may not be true, more fragile. And so if you are attacking that person, you come off as, you know, a bit too harsh.
Yes. Yes.
A football player a football player isn't perceived in that way. I'll tell you what, though.
Maybe we're seeing a change here.
A change. Well, I mean, we've had professional athletes admit that they suffer from mental health issues.
But that's not. No, I mean, like Kevin Love sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter when his coach tells him he needs to go in the game and he says, I can't, coach.
Well, he did. I mean, during a game, he had to leave the arena. He had a panic attack, or he had an anxiety thing. That was a real thing. He got there was another story about Kevin Love being terrified and going into, you know, having a real issue on a flight.
I understand that.
Yeah. I pulled up the story. I just pulled up the story on Love because just before the 2018 NBA All-Star Game, Toronto Raptors guard DeMar DeRozan revealed via tweet that he had been struggling with depression. In a recent interview with TNT analyst David Aldridge, DeRozan explained how support from fans and others around the world have helped encourage him since disclosing his struggle. In the Players' Tribune, and this would have been dated, I don't have the date on this, but it was, I think, last year. In an essay in the Players' Tribune, Cleveland Cavaliers all-star forward, maybe even 2 years ago, Kevin Love disclosed that he suffered a panic attack earlier this season during a game. In the piece, which is titled, Everyone is Going Through Something, Love explained that he suffered a panic attack on November 5th during the Cavs' 117-115 home loss to the Hawks. According to the Associated Press recap of the game, Love left the game in the third quarter with an illness, and the team announced that Love, who had 4 points and four rebounds in 19 minutes, was treated and released. He said, I was winded within the first few possessions. That was strange, and my game was just off. I played 15 minutes in the first half, made one basket and two free throws. After halftime, it all hit the fan. Coach Lou called a timeout in the third quarter. When I got to the bench, I felt my heart racing faster than usual. Then I was having trouble catching my breath. It's hard to describe. Everything was spinning like my brain was trying to climb out of my head. The air felt thick and heavy. My mouth was like chalk. I remember our assistant coach yelling something about a defensive set. I nodded, but I didn't hear much of what he said. By that point, I was freaking out. When I got up to walk out of the huddle, I knew I couldn't re-enter the game, like literally couldn't do it physically. Coach Lou came up to me. I think he could sense something was wrong. I blurted something like, "I'll be right back," and I ran back to the locker room. He said, "I felt like my body was trying to say, 'You're going to die.'" I ended up on the floor in the training room, lying on my back, trying to get enough air to breathe. The next part was a blur. You know, these are all symptoms of panic attack, according to the Cleveland
right.
Clinic. And so this is a diagnosed mental, you know, health
yes.
illness.
I understand that.
Right.
I understand that. That was a November game that no one was paying attention
yeah, I
to. I mean, Simone Biles' situation is the fourth quarter of a playoff game.
Yeah.
A deciding game.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to notice it. And I just think that if there's sympathy for her, and it all may be warranted, people much more informed about this, you know, are expressing their support for her, then you have to do the same thing if it happens to a player in a competitive situation in college or professional sports.
If there's like a cover of, if she's on the, like the cover of some big time magazine tomorrow, you're going to tweet it out and say, "Looks like she's not feeling the pressure as much as she was before."
Only if she uses it for her own purposes.
Well, she's holding
like somebody else did.
She just held a press conference. I read to you some of the quotes. We don't have the whole gist of
right.
it. Look.
I understand. I believe her. I'm sympathetic to her. I'm just saying that if this is an acceptable reaction, then it's got to be acceptable to everybody who faces this.
I don't want to just draw like a hard line that says diagnosed mental health illness or not. And if it's not, then, you're going to have to tough it out. You know, you committed to this thing. You're part of a team. You're going to have to tough it out no matter how much pressure there is on you. But on some level, I sort of feel that way. I just hate feeling that way towards a young female athlete, but I shouldn't feel any differently. But we don't know what it is with her. But my point is, if we all of a sudden get into this situation where athletes start saying, there's just too much pressure. I couldn't deal with it. So I left the team. That's not acceptable. That's not acceptable. Everybody in life has pressures. You know, people go into work every day feeling the pressure of performing. You know, and when you're part of a company or you're part of a team, unless there is a legitimate issue, physical or mental, and there could be a lot of the time. I don't know, man. Sorry. You know, this is, you know, adversity facing. This is part of, you know, maturing as a human being. You know, you can't go around it. Sometimes you got to go right through it. It's the only way.
But to make it clear, you're not talking about Simone Biles.
I'm not talking about Simone Biles because I don't know if she has some sort
right.
of actual mental health illness.
I'm just clearing it up.
Yeah.
Just so there's no confusion for people out there. And neither am I in a situation like that.
Right.
But
you know,
there was just a story about a strike that was settled by Frito-Lay because some of its workers were striking about working conditions that included an 84-hour work week. That's pressure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are degrees of pressure. And by the way, it's a very subjective thing. But,
yeah
I mean, look, this gets into a long conversation that I know many of you out there as parents have had and, you know, about this generation and their ability to handle adversity, their level of accountability, their level of responsibility. I think about that a lot, and I sometimes wonder if it's my fault, you know, if it's our fault. You know, Tommy and I have talked about this, and you know, I had a job when I was 13 years old. Like, you got to get out, you got to work. It's summer, and you know, and I always had a job, and I tried to do that with my three boys, not at 13 necessarily, but my oldest had a job, you know, working, you know, as a 15-year-old, and was, and I said every summer, you got to have a job, you got to have responsibility, you got to learn what it's, you know, what it is to have people, not your parents, but people, other people, relying on you. You know, and that's like an important thing, I think. And I don't know how many, you know, I wasn't able to do it with all of my boys. You know, every kid's different. Every kid is completely different.
Yes.
But
yes, they are.
But it's I don't know, man. I don't have any of the answers. That's for sure. I hope she's okay. But if it's one of those things where it's just like the pressure and the. Well, yeah, because you're great, and by the way, you're making a fortune, or if you haven't already, you're on the verge of making a fortune because of this, and there's a lot of responsibility and a lot of pressure that comes with it. But again, to be clear, if there's a mental health illness here, she's got to just focus on fixing that. None of the other stuff matters.
I agree.
Do you know, Tommy, that the number one, somebody may correct me if I'm wrong, but I read this recently, that the number one reason, the number one cause of suicide, teenage suicide, is social media shaming now, especially for girls. I don't know if it's number one for boys, but somebody may correct me if I'm wrong, but I read something recently that, you know, teenage suicide has gone up significantly over, you know, several years, if not, you know, decades at this point. I don't know what the numbers are on that. But now with social media, the number one reason for teenage suicide in girls, maybe boys too, is social media shaming. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. I believe it.
Well,
I do believe it.
Social media, yeah, it's so important. It's that generation.
It's
their lifeblood.
And it's so cruel.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, it's so important to them. And they're unable, unfortunately, to handle that. I don't have any of the answers. Are we done for the day?
Yes, we are, boys. I got a beach to go to.
Go to the beach. Take care of that cold. I'm back tomorrow.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.